This is Katrine, and I just have a couple of quick notes before we begin the podcast. The first thing is, I was going through my email account for Voices, and I accidentally purged my entire email account. So if you have sent me an email in the last week and I haven't responded to you, please send it again so that I can make contact. And I'm especially interested in talking with a woman who lives in Utah, and she is married to a transgendered person. So if that is you, I would love it if you could resend me that email to voices@mormonexpression.com. Today I am debuting our new bumper music. We have someone that is a friend of the show, and he donated his music to us. It will be at the beginning of the podcast, and stay tuned at the end where I am going to play the entirety of his beautiful music. Finally, today this podcast is featuring Ryan, who is coming to us all the way from Sweden. At times, the quality of the recording isn't as great as I would like, but I believe you'll be able to hear everything and understand everything that Ryan has to tell us. He has a great story. So here we go. Please join us for Mormon Expression Voices. Welcome back to Mormon Expression Voices. My name is Katrine, and today I am excited to finally talk with somebody that I've been wanting to talk to for several months. His name is Ryan, and we are actually Skyping with him from Sweden. So thank you for taking the time to talk with us today, Ryan.
Thank you.
And Ryan, it is a very small world because come to find out, we didn't know when we started communicating that Ryan is actually a cousin to my sister-in-law. So I already feel like we have a close connection. So I'm excited to hear his story and find out what his life has been like with Mormonism.
Yeah, it's crazy how small of a world it is.
Yes. So Ryan, do you want to begin, kind of in the beginning of your story where you grew up?
Yeah, sure. Well, I was born in Provo, Utah, and I am the oldest of some 30 cousins, if you can, on both sides. And well, like on my mother's side, we have a long line of Mormons and Freemasons, actually, dating back to the 1800s. I am actually related to the prophet on my mother's side. I believe that he is my mom's second cousin. I'm not quite sure. I've never met him, but my mom's very happy to tell me about that.
Oh, so you're talking about Thomas Monson? Okay.
So, I mean, I've got a lot of Mormon roots. Of course, polygamy on that side of the family as well. And but then on my father's side, they are converts. They were. My grandmother went to primary with a friend as a child, and later on, when they were pregnant with my father, the missionaries knocked on their door and ended up converting them when they were living in Long Beach, California. And so that's a little history with them. But I was born in Provo and raised mainly in Orem, Utah, until I was about 15. In my first years of my life, we were pretty poor when my dad was going to school. And then when I was around 8 years old, my dad was finished with school. And I don't really know how he did it, but out of nowhere, we had a lot of money. And we ended up moving to a real nice neighborhood above UVSC, where I spent a lot of my youth running around and having fun. So my father he was a real estate investor. He also wrote books. He was quite successful. He wrote for Simon and Schuster. And so I had a upbringing. And not only that, was also very involved. My father was very active in church, and my mother as well. My dad taught seminary, and he served in the state presidency, and he even was at one time a part owner of Aspen Books, which publishes
a lot of church type books, I guess you would call it. So that's kind of like, that's the fun, happy side of it. My dad also, we later on found out, and we saw signs of it, is bipolar manic depressant. And it kind of affected a little bit of my upbringing and really affected things later on. But we had the family home evening and all these kind of things.
So it sounds like you were pretty happy early on.
Yeah. I was happy, but I also, there was like, even early on, there was things that I wasn't quite comfortable with when it came to the church, even as a child. Basically, the thing that I had a problem with and didn't feel comfortable with is this whole thing of being God's chosen people, and that God would, being our Heavenly Father, would almost care more for certain kids than he did other kids. And I kind of just felt like, I would hate it if my parents loved my sister more than me, into the fact that maybe they would tell my sister the truth, but they would lie to me or not fill me in on the secrets of happiness, on the secrets of life. And, I realized that growing up, because with my dad and his work and traveling, I met a lot of people outside of the church, and I couldn't help but to think that these people were just as nice and good people as we were in my family, but why wouldn't God love them enough to tell them about the Book of Mormon, and why wouldn't they be born into the covenant, and why were they not the chosen people? And so I liked going to church to a point. I mean, I did think it was boring, but I mean, there was parts of it I liked, but that was definitely something that I didn't feel comfortable with, even as a child. I didn't like to hear that I was a chosen son.
Okay, good point.
Yeah.
All right. And was your mom a stay-at-home mom?
She was. She was a stay-at-home mom since I was young. And my mom was amazing. And I had a really good relationship with my mom. And we could talk about mostly everything, as long as I wasn't, not everything. There was always things you keep from your parents. But I had a really good relationship with my mom, and I still do. And I'm very thankful for that.
Good. And so you said you were in Orem till about 15 years old, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I was in... there's a lot more to the story there and why I left. I mean, a lot of my life was really good with the church, and I love scouts. I was an Eagle Scout. As I said, the church could get boring, so I usually actually ditched Sunday school with my friends and just went down to like, I think it was Packards back then, and we'd buy candy and we would hang out on the grass and until they would finally figure out that we were gone and told our parents and we'd get in trouble. I just like got really bored of the repetition of the lessons, that it was more or less the same thing I was listening to every Sunday. It just felt like there was not much more they were coming at. And so I got bored with church. But growing up, I had some good friends. I hung out with some Tongan friends. I had some Mexican friends. And I guess that was a little abnormal for my neighborhood. I was probably one of the only... There was one other of my friends that hung out with us. And we were a little rebellious for being in junior high. And we listened to rap music and listened to music maybe our parents didn't approve of. But at the same time, we were pretty innocent. It was nothing that I would, especially today looking back, it was nothing abnormal. But I was always very protective. I was protective of the people that I loved, especially my family. I really loved all of my cousins and my brothers and sisters and really wanted to watch out for them. When I was 15, I was going to Lake Ridge Junior High, and my sister let me know that she was being sexually harassed by a kid that was in her class, and he was calling her and calling her a slut and a bitch and just calling her names and saying things that were not at all nice. And finding out about this, I confronted him in the hall at school, and I threatened him that I was going to beat him up if he didn't leave my sister alone. And then he came back at me and told me that his, I think it was his, he had a brother that was more like a foster child that was living with them. And I knew that he was in a gang, and he told me that he was going to come up the next day for threatening him. And I got really scared. I went home and I kind of grew up like with my father. He always taught me to be independent. I actually started working when I was 10, sharpening knives. And later at 13, I worked at a car wash, washing cars and vacuuming. And I like to do things on my own. I like to take care of myself. So I didn't tell my parents about this. At the same time, I was really freaked out because this guy was in high school and he was in a gang, and I was not so smart, and I brought a knife with me to school and put it in my backpack. And the next day I was sitting in math class and got called out of class by the principal. And long story short, they ended up finding the knife in my backpack. I got arrested and I got expelled from the Utah school district, from what I understand, permanently. So I was not allowed to go to a public school in Utah for carrying a knife. And they were pressing charges against me. I ended up getting home taught, went through some hard times of feeling depressed and scared that I was going to end up in a juvenile prison. And my family, then we went on a vacation to Hawaii. We actually went with my Aunt Carrie and her family as well to Hawaii, and we were on vacation. And my dad came back and went to the hotel room one day and just said we weren't going to go back, that we were going to actually move to Hawaii. And then I could start school there.
And had this been his plan all along?
I don't know if it was like his plan. I mean, I know we talked about moving to Hawaii before, but it kind of, you know, I know my dad cared a lot about me and my mom, and it didn't really look like I was going to be able to go back home and go to school. So I think they looked at it as a way that, okay, it was a bad situation, Utah, at least for me. And I think they just decided to move then. My dad worked, like I said, in real estate. He wrote books about real estate investment, and he also did write some motivational church books as well. I can't really remember the names of them, but he could kind of work wherever he lived. And so I guess it was not so hard to move.
And how did you feel about that move? Was it exciting for you to have a new beginning, or what were you thinking?
It was really a lot of mixed feelings. It was a lot of mixed feelings, and I felt like, you know, I had a lot of really good friends back home in Utah, and I was like, what's going to happen? And I stayed in touch with a few of them, and I'm still in touch with a couple of them today, which is really nice. But I was worried about that. But I felt relieved to kind of have a fresh start. I really wasn't feeling good. Just was scared about the whole situation. Luckily, the charges ended up getting dropped. So I never actually had to go to trial. I kind of ended up having to do with some things that this guy had done that were pretty sketchy. And there was some stuff that he had done with some other kids when it came to sexual harassment. So his family decided to drop the charges so none of this other stuff would end up coming out. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of a big thing, and I think it was even in the newspaper and stuff back then in the 90s.
Yeah, I can imagine how scary that would be, that you were just trying to protect yourself and you might end up in jail over it, and that would be frightening.
Yeah, I was scared. I mean, I wasn't a type of kid that got in a lot of trouble. I mean, I had been in, I think the only other fight that I had been in at the time was over a kid in elementary school that said that my mom had a fat ass. And obviously I got really mad, and I think I pulled out like some moves I learned from watching Karate Kid. It was like nothing serious, but that was probably the only fight that I really been in. I wrestled in junior high a bit, but you know, that was more as a sport, but yeah, it kind of freaked me out, the whole thing.
Yeah. It sounds like your parents are pretty understanding and supportive of your situation.
They definitely were. They really were. And yeah, I was really lucky to have the parents I had. And, you know, they, as we'll get into with my father, things have gotten a little different since then, but I just feel really blessed that to have had such a, you know, a good father, and to have known him when he was okay, when he was more normal.
Right. So you ended up moving to Hawaii. How was that paradise?
It was a real eye opener. It was, I really, you know, of course I loved going surfing and going to the beach with my friends, and ended up like coming into the culture there. I also learned a lot about it. I mean, growing up in Utah, you, especially as a, when you were a teenager or early teen, and things started to change, and if you go like with the standards that we were supposed to live by, being morally clean and all of this kind of stuff, and as you probably have heard, like a teenage boy, it's a teenager period. It's not exactly an easy thing to live by. I mean, there's things happening and feelings going on that conflict with what the church teaches, like how we're supposed to live. I know, like, just speaking frankly, it was like, you know, this whole thing with you're not supposed to masturbate, and being a young boy and not even basically being able to control that. I mean, you could be just laying in bed and all of a sudden just the sheets rub you the wrong way and it would trigger it off, and you felt like you were sinning, and just felt like, oh my God, Heavenly Father sees this and I'm bad. And it's just all that guilt that came with that, and just not knowing how to handle the situation. But then, and they end up lying to the bishop because you wanted to pass the sacrament, and realizing that, you know, talking to a couple of my close friends that I wasn't the only one with this situation. So like going to church was not only boring, but it was really awkward because you ended up feeling so ashamed of yourself all the time, because here you were supposed to be having the priesthood and representing God and passing the sacrament to the other people in the ward, and you just felt like, oh my, the bishop, does he know? Should I tell him? If I tell him, is he going to excommunicate me? Is he going to, what's going to happen? I mean, you're constantly terrified. But like living in Hawaii and meeting other people, like so many people that weren't members of the church, you started to realize that, you know, this is just normal for a teenager. Teenagers have these issues. Teenagers do play with themselves. Had a really good friend, Randolin, who was in my math class, and we ended up becoming really good friends. And I mean, she would just speak openly about, you know, her sexuality. And it just blew my mind that here a girl could just tell me that, oh, you know, I masturbate sometimes. It's nice. I'm like, what? You know, how girls don't do that. They only talk about this in church, that guys have a problem with this, you know. And it was just like, what is going on? I mean, how? So it was good in that sense that I. But at the same time, it was in Hawaii. There was constantly apostles coming to the church. It was just kind of funny that I never saw an apostle in my ward in Utah. But I probably met like a handful of them living in Hawaii. It seemed like they had a lot of business to do, a lot of church work to do in Hawaii.
How convenient for them.
Yeah. It was like, it seemed like every other Sunday there was an apostle at the church. And I mean, they'd come up and they would shake your hand, and being a teenager, knowing, oh my God, does he know what I do with that hand? And like, you just felt like he had the power to see right through you. And here was an apostle that talks to God and Jesus, and he knows what a sinner I am. I mean, it was just terrifying. It wasn't at all fun to meet them. I was just scared shitless. Yeah. But yeah, they were very conveniently often in our church, in our ward building there in Maui.
That's funny. Yeah, I've lived in Utah almost my whole life, and I've never met an apostle or a prophet.
Yeah, if you want to meet an apostle, move to Hawaii, because they're there all the time. They have a lot of church work to do.
A lot of pressing work, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I lived there for probably less than a year, actually, and we ended up moving to Arizona, and sophomore.
Yeah.
Sophomore year of high school. That was when I moved to Gilbert, Arizona, and once again thrown into a community of Mormons. And it was interesting. You know, it was like going, Hawaii was nice in the sense that I could associate with a lot of non-Mormons. And then when I moved to Arizona, I was then again surrounded by the church in school, and no matter where you went.
Was it a comforting feeling, or did you prefer it the other way?
I think at the time I preferred it the other way. I was, you know, I believed in the church just because that was like all I knew. But at the same time, I didn't like it. I was just really bored by church. I mean, had my parents let me not go, I absolutely would not have gone. But I went for them. I went for my family. And I was okay with that. You know, there were things with the church that I really loved. I love the sense of loyalty to your family. I loved all the, you know, for me, church and family kind of were merged together, and I just love that. You know, having a big family, we had family reunions all the time and family get-togethers and dinners, and these were things I just loved. I did not like listening to a boring Sunday school lesson over and over again about the Word of Wisdom and these things over and over again, but I just like that it brought us together. I graduated from high school in Arizona, went to Highland High School, and ended up just had some good years. Was going to I went to seminary, not all the time. Went to church, didn't always go to Sunday school. Ended up making more friends outside of the church again than in the church. Just ended up feeling more comfortable with them, and ended up getting involved in art and photography, into music, and I just felt like I found a lot of happiness in a lot of these things that I wasn't supposed to. I couldn't understand why some things that I thought were so interesting were not okay. I loved artwork. I loved tattoos and people that were tattooed, and didn't understand why that was a sin. I started getting interested more in girls and didn't understand why that was wrong. But it was just a lot of things I didn't understand. I was confused. Why are all of these things wrong? Mm-hmm. When I felt good about it, but constantly feeling like I need to feel bad about this, and eventually I would feel bad about it.
Did you ever voice your opinion of what you were feeling and thinking?
Eventually I did. And I would just get God has certain rules that you need to live by and standards, and back to that chosen people thing. And then that didn't really feel good to me about that. I started, I started looking a little bit into the church and realizing that, I didn't really know so much, but then I started getting into it and realizing that black people were their skin was black because they were cursed, and that didn't sit very right, and really understanding that Native Americans and Latin Americans were dark because they were cursed, because they were Lamanites, and I just didn't understand, why would God do that? Why would he do that to his kids? Why would he, if I had kids, I wouldn't want to curse them, even if they were bad. I wouldn't want to especially curse their kids' kids and their kids because of something someone else did. So I kept going back to that, and then that would end up bringing me a little bit away. I smoked weed going to high school, and did things I wasn't supposed to do with girls and stuff like that. And things in high school did get a little bit out of control. There was people I hung out with that started getting in trouble. I never really got so much into trouble myself, but a lot of people around me did. And a lot of my friends started taking heavier drugs, and some of them started selling drugs. And I just started looking around and seeing a lot of the stuff happening, and started wondering if maybe the church is right. They're telling me this stuff is bad, and this stuff makes, if you sin, then you're going to turn out bad and you're going to fall. And I wondered if it wasn't all this sinning that caused them the problems were coming from the way that they, from what they did. But I related it to the church because that's all I knew.
Mm-hmm. So you were seeing their life choices causing problems with them, and to you that related directly with the church's teachings.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, you're kind of indoctrinated. I mean, you are brainwashed through primary, and even recognize that, and I already felt that primary was, I wasn't okay with primary either, because I thought, why are kids singing? I know the scriptures are true, and I want to go on a mission when they don't really know if they want to go on a mission. And I thought about a lot of stuff like this, even as a child. I'm like, why are we singing this? I haven't really decided yet. But at the same time, it imprinted in my brain. And so I started wondering if, the church was right. Maybe happiness is in the church. Maybe this is the only answer. And I had some friends OD and end up in prison. And it just kind of scared me. I'm like, I need to change my life. And I did need to change my life. And I needed to get away from some of the things that were around me. And for me, the answer was the church. But I hadn't got a testimony, so I felt like I needed to take care of that.
Okay. Did you fulfill the primary song and go on a mission?
I eventually did after praying probably for a long time and feeling like I got an answer. I ended up confessing to the bishop some of the things, like a lot, everything that I'd done, and just coming clean, and that felt great to finally be honest about, be up front. This is what I've done. Here it is. So I was disfellowshipped for a period of time before I could go on a mission. And I said, I want to go on a mission. I want to get my life together. And I felt like going on a mission would be the answer. That would be what I need to do. There was just too much going around me that I wanted to get an escape from. And the mission just felt like that was what I needed to do. So I was up front, told the bishop everything, got disfellowshipped, had a very hard time holding all of the rules until I left, but I did. I just held every rule. I mean, I didn't go out. I would sit at home. I'd read the scriptures. I read the book for the first time and felt like I was getting my life back on track. I went to seminary, went on splits with the missionaries, and I was a changed person.
Good. So even, you know, looking back, it sounded like you did need to go a different direction because you might have gone somewhere that would have been harmful for you. And at least it sounds to me, at least the church gave you a different direction. Is that saying too much or is that how you feel?
I think that's how I felt. Looking back, I think I knew on my own that I needed to make changes, and I believe I was making changes regardless of that. The church definitely made it easier. It was like a safety net for me. I think, you know, I heard a podcast not long back where John Larson said that the church takes what we already know and sells it back to us. And I can't agree more with that. I think that's so true that, you know, I always had like this inner, you know what's right and wrong. You know that you should be nice to your neighbor, and especially living here in Sweden now. I mean, there's like hardly anyone I know anymore that's religious or believes in God over here. But at the same time, people know what's right and wrong. They don't need a church to tell them that. They don't need, you know, you figure stuff out along the way. Some people do, some people don't, obviously. I think I probably would have figured out on my own, but it did make it easier, definitely.
So where did you go on your mission?
I went to Sweden. I actually, to backtrack, I went to Sweden nearly every summer growing up since I was about 10 years old. My dad served his mission in Sweden, and being wealthy, he was able to afford a summer home, and we bought a summer home in Sweden. And even before that, we came to Sweden just to visit friends during the summer. So I was coming to Sweden, like I said, every summer. Already had a lot of contacts and friends here, and barely knew the language. But I like Sweden, and so when I filled out my mission papers, I wrote down that I knew a little Swedish, which I kind of did, not really. I could say my name is Ryan, and that was about it.
It's a lot more than a lot of people.
Yeah, a little funny side note is that one of my best friends from Orem, he also came to Sweden with me one summer, and I told him, hey, you know what? He ended up going on his mission like 6 months after me, but I said, hey, let's both write down that we know Swedish and just study a little Swedish, like on these books on tape, and let's see what happens. So we ended up both getting called to Sweden. So.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how prophetic our callings were. We kind of rigged that whole thing. We ended up both serving in Sweden. That was pretty fun.
Good to know. If you're a missionary, you want to go foreign speaking.
Yeah, that's a little tip. I mean, pick a country that there's not many people that know the language, and just listen to a book on tape so you can have an okay conscience with it, and just write it down, and there's a good chance you're going to get called. That place. Yeah.
Okay, definitely. So you must have been happy to get that mission call.
I was really happy. I didn't want to be in the United States. I wanted to get away. I really did like Sweden already, and so I felt good about it. I went on my mission. I went to the MTC and
how was that?
It was intense. It was definitely different. I quickly realized that a lot of the other elders that were in my group and sisters they knew a lot more about the church than I did. I knew a little bit. I read the Book of Mormon. I felt like I just had a really good group. I think on my mission, no one got sent home. We were just like this, we were this mission of people that were just good. We followed the rules. And I felt like the rebel, even though I actually, you know, I served an honorable mission. I kept the rules, but it was interesting to be around all the time these people that were so dedicated to the church. Just being force-fed scriptures and lessons and
I want to backtrack a little bit because you mentioned that your family had a lot of Freemasons. Did you know that there was such a strong relation to the Masonic ceremonies in the temple when you went to the temple for the first time?
Yeah, I did. I heard a little bit about the temple from non-member friends. So I had my friend tell me that they were going to do some sort of like a different symbol, some of the symbols that don't exist anymore. I asked my mom about them, and she told me, I think this one where it looks like you're slitting your throat, and my mom ended up telling me that they don't do that anymore. But that was, if that was good, you asked about that, because that was a really big letdown for me. I was really excited to go to the temple because I kept being told that you're going to get a lot of answers there. You're going to find out a lot of truths, and it was this really amazing spiritual experience. And so I was really pumped to go to the temple, and I did know about that there was some Masonic ties, and I was fine with that. I mean, my family, it's not like we talked about that a lot, but it was mentioned, you know, that grandpa and my great grandpa was actually one of the, I think they're called wizards, or one of the higher ups in Salt Lake in the Masonic Lodge. And so it wasn't strange for me, but the disappointment with the temple was that I felt like I went there and I didn't even learn anything. I thought we were going to be able to talk and we'd find out all these secrets about heaven and the secrets of God. And we ended up just watching a movie. I was like, what is this? I don't want to watch a movie. I want to like learn. And we were wearing, I mean, the clothes just kind of like, it felt like they were just not very stylish. So I thought, can we at least wear something that looks cool? You know, like really, I just felt really silly, and that everyone looked really silly in there. And it was a letdown. I wasn't shocked or thought it was weird, except for the clothes were really ugly. I was more just really let down that we didn't learn anything new.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, okay, I'm going to come back here and watch a movie. Or go and be in the locker room and have someone, you know, like, that was awkward, but it just felt weird.
Yeah.
And if you know what I'm talking about, being in the locker room before. Yeah, I was like, what are we doing? A ritual in the locker room? So it's like we're in like a school locker room doing something, and it was not what I was expecting. I was expecting something much more cool. It was just really boring.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my experience with the temple.
Okay. So you're in the MTC. If you thought the temple was boring, was the MTC boring also, or did you get that, you were thirsting knowledge of some sort? Did you get that there?
I got really bored. And in fact, I was just so sleepy that I couldn't stay awake in the classes. I ended up going, they ended up sending me to the doctor, and which was my uncle Carl, who was going to like check up and see if I had any sleeping issues. And I think it was more just boredom. I was just bored out of my mind with this, with everything. And so I was tired. I ended up like taking naps. I got permission to take naps during the day so I could like make it through. It was an interesting experience. But back when I went on my mission, we weren't exercising properly. I think we had like, it was one day a week or something that we were exercising. And we were just eating this disgusting food at the, full of carbs and just bad food at the BYU cafeteria. And it just made me tired. I was very tired when I was there.
Okay. And then you get to go to Sweden.
Yeah, I went to Sweden, and I got my first companion, and he was really cool. He was a little bit laid back. I mean, he wasn't like a bad missionary. He was just a little bit laid back, and it was nice to kind of just ease into it, get a little comfortable with the language. But then I got my first area. I was there for 7 months, and we had a couple baptisms, which is not normal for Sweden. Usually people don't baptize anyone. I started to realize that the people we were teaching were mostly crazy. Normal Swedish people were definitely not interested in what we had to say. The people that were interested were people that really had mental issues. The majority of them or moved in from another country. I think one of the first baptisms I had was a African American, and that was very uncomfortable for me because I asked the mission president if we should tell them about with the priesthood and that blacks couldn't have the priesthood. And I didn't really know why myself. I was really uncomfortable with all of that. And I think we ended up talking very vaguely with them, but we definitely didn't go into depth. And we ended up baptizing him, and I didn't feel good about it. I just felt like, are we tricking him? Does he really know that he is, in our eyes, cursed, that God cursed his skin? And so it wasn't such a great experience for me, the first.
And what was your mission president's advice?
I don't really remember. I had a good mission president. I really did. I really liked him. I think he kind of just said, we'll take care of it, I believe. And I think someone did talk to him. We had another African family in the ward, and I believe that they talked to him. I guess he was okay with it. I wasn't okay with it. I just felt bad. But I was happy that, you know, he came to the true church, and I did believe the church was true, even though I had all these questions myself. I still thought, well, they're just my issues. But it's true, and I don't understand why God didn't, why he cursed black people, but he must have had a reason. Shortly after that, I got another companion, and he was one of these guys, I called him like a Nazi Mormon. He was really strict. He followed every rule, and it felt like almost without feeling. And it was during that time that my father, who already was showing a lot of signs of not being well, it's just that I couldn't figure it out. You just think that, you know, it's my dad, you know, you grow up with him. He's just a little weird, and that's just how he is. I mean, there were some times when it got really bad. I actually ran away for a little while because of some stuff with my dad. But, you know, we ended up going back, and this is how my dad is, and he told me some things that, I guess, to go back, my dad, I know that he was interviewed, and my mom even confirmed this, that he was interviewed by the CIA when I was really young to work for them. My dad was he was really smart, to say the least. He was almost like he was too smart for one of those guys that's a little bit too smart. And so I guess he got interviewed by the CIA, but he ended up turning it down, and my mom wasn't comfortable with the job, and he ended up working with other things. Before I left my mission, he started acting a little weird, and he told me that he actually did take the job for them. And I just like, okay. You know, I thought, well, I wanted to believe him. He was my dad. And I just thought, well, that's cool. And, all right. But it was right before I went on a mission. I ended up going on a mission, and my dad called me while I was in my first area. And he said he was in Sweden. And he said that he was on some sort of secret mission in Sweden. And I was like, what? What is going on? Then I started finding out that he wasn't in Sweden that time, not yet. And my dad ended up in jail for some things. I don't know exactly everything that happened, but he ended up in jail, and he ended up in a mental hospital. And I was still really confused about everything, and my parents, I don't remember all the order of all this. I was trying to stay focused, but I was just really sad, and I was really confused. What was going on with my dad? He was flipping out.
Did you know he was having mental problems, or did you think he was just making wrong choices?
I didn't even really know what to think at the time. I was really, like, when I decide to really do something, I go, like, all in. And I really did go all in on my mission, and I was just trying to stay focused on that. But at the same time, I was trying to deal with it, and I really didn't know what to think. More of this is going to unfold a little bit later. But my companion at the time, he was, I would want to talk to him about it, and he wouldn't talk to me about it. And I was like, how can you be so cold? I mean, how can you let rules get away of, like, we're people, we need to talk, we need to, like, I need someone to talk to, and I had no one to talk to, and he wouldn't talk to me. And I would get letters from home, and he wouldn't want me to read them because it wasn't P-Day. I said, what is wrong with this guy? At the same time, we were teaching a family there, and they were feeling pretty good about the church, and we ended up being at their place past our curfew. And I remember him, like, riding back home as fast as we could, and he was just angry. He was furious that we were late, and he was so mad. He made a scene while we were there teaching them. And then when we got back, he was just enraged over the fact that we were late and we had broken a rule. And I didn't understand it. I was like, come on, dude. I mean, calm down. We had good intentions. We were teaching. We were doing the Lord's work. Chill out. And I even called the president, said, he's freaking out. And he just said, oh, he'll be okay, he'll be okay. And the family even called, this non-member family, to see how he's doing. He ended up yelling at him and chewing him out and telling him that, you know, you made me late. And a non-member family, they don't understand this. It was like 10 o'clock. And he was just pissed that we were late. And I just like, who is this guy? And shortly after, like, he ended up getting transferred, and he ended up becoming the zone leader. And I was like, President, how can you make a guy that is like this the zone leader? Oh, but he's a good in these kind of things. And I was like, that's still the rules are, I understand, but he was actually mean to an investigator. And we never actually, I don't think we could even go back to them after that. And so I didn't understand that. And I kept seeing my mission, that throughout my mission, the guys that were really into the rules and almost robotic, guys that gave you a hug, but you didn't really feel that they cared about you, they were the ones that became the APs. In fact, this guy I told you about, he became the AP. And I did not feel good about that. I'm like, are these the leaders of our church? Are these the guys that are our leaders, the ones that don't really care about other people, they just care about following the rules? And so I sat with that, but I was at the same time dealing with this stuff with my dad and not really knowing what was going on, and ended up going to another area, you know, had some success there. But we ended up getting transferred out really quick, and I think that had to do with a bishop that had actually been molesting a child, from what I understand. And that was just like, okay, another a leader that did that. How do I feel about that? He was lost. But we didn't ever really find much out about it. We just got rushed out of there, and then they put some other elders in. They whitewashed our area. And then I was in Stockholm, in downtown Stockholm. And that's when my dad called me and said, I'm in Sweden. And I see you. And I was like, where, what do you see me? Yeah, you're in these apartments. And then I started to realize that. I said, okay, but what does my apartment look like? And then he started to describe it, and it was wrong. Like, I'm like, Dad, I don't live in an apartment that looks like that. Oh, okay, but still, I'm watching you. And then he told me some other stuff about these agents that were after him, and that he was hurt, and that they had tried to kill him, and just like this really scary stuff. And I realized that, you know, he is not okay. You know, something's wrong. And I talked to my president, and it wasn't long after that that my dad went into the secret police in Sweden, armed, thinking that he was going to do some sort of deal with the Swedish secret police, because he actually thought that he was an agent. And he ended up getting arrested, obviously. He had weapons on him. And this hit the newspapers in Sweden, all over Sweden, this was rough. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm on my mission, and my dad is here, where I am, on my mission, arrested. And mission, yeah.
Were you communicating with your
experience?
Were you communicating with your mom?
I was communicating with my mom, but very, very limited. You know, I think I was probably allowed one phone call. No, it was, you're on your mission, you're not supposed to call except for on Mother's Day and Christmas. So, and they just kept telling me, just serve your mission. And my mission president, he asked me if I wanted to transfer missions. I think he said that I could go to England. And by then my friend had already come to Sweden, and I felt like I started to learn the language. I mean, and God had called me to go to Sweden, and I wanted to I felt God called me to come to Sweden. I need to be in Sweden. So I decided to stay. And despite people, you know, I think I said my name, and my dad's name was in the newspaper, and I could knock on doors and people would recognize the name and ask me if I was related to this guy. I'd have to tell him, yeah.
Well, adds a whole new level of stress on your mission, I'm sure.
It was, but I mean, I think you're kind of programmed to just move on. You're programmed to, you're doing the Lord's work, and that's what's more important. So I kind of learned to just shove all of this out of my head. It was also around that time, actually a little bit before that, that my grandmother passed away, and my Aunt Carrie's mother. And she was someone I was extremely close to. She was someone I rode my bike to on the weekends and I just hung out with, and she passed away of cancer while I was on my mission. And so I never got to say goodbye to her, and that was hard. Mm. I didn't get to go home and go to the funeral. I was on my mission. I was doing the Lord's work, and I just felt like I had to like teach myself to shut everything out.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to see your dad while he was there in Sweden?
No, never.
Did you want to?
I don't know. I mean, I was so into being a missionary that I would do whatever I was supposed to do. And I don't know. I was scared. I didn't know what to think. And I just was worrying all the time about my mom, and he ended up getting sent back to the U.S. and to a mental hospital, and they ended up breaking up for good reasons. It wasn't healthy for my mom at all. It wasn't healthy for anyone. It was a bad situation. So I just kept serving. I kept doing my mission, and I kind of put that all aside, but at the same time I'd worry about them. And my family, and during the day I tried to be a good missionary.
So far on your mission, your dad has had a breakdown, your grandma passed away, and your parents also broke up?
Yeah. That all happened on my mission. And I also had an uncle die as well.
Wow.
Well, that's on my mission. Carrie's brother, Ken. Yeah, my uncle Ken died. And that was also rough. I loved Ken a lot. He was a good guy.
Well, that must have been hard for you, just thinking from, I know they teach missionaries that they are so blessed if they go on missions and their families will be blessed for their efforts. Did you ever think about that or have those thoughts?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was, I could get pretty emotional about it. And I mean, I thought about it, but I just felt like God's testing me, you know? He's testing me, and people would say things like, oh, you're being tried, and you're really chosen, and all this stuff, and that God has big plans for you, and that's why he's trying you so hard. And I feel a good missionary. I felt good about my mission. At the same time, I was struggling with my own issues. So, when I was on my mission, I also did, for the first time, I started reading the Bible. I'd read the Book of Mormon, and, you know, I was okay with that. There was a lot of the stories that I grew up hearing, but you didn't always hear all, you heard a little bit of the Bible stories, but there was a lot of stories I really wasn't familiar with. And as I started and hearing some of the stories about God sending down angels to kill entire cities that were homosexual, and their women and children and just people that were evil, I just didn't understand why a loving God would do that. There was a lot of other things that I read. It just sounded like fictional, or more like fairy tale story, something that you would read out of a Harry Potter book. And it just didn't make sense. And I asked questions, like I did a lot of these questions to mission president and leaders, and they would just say, like, well, you know, we don't know all the answers now. We'll find out in heaven when we die. And even later on, that became like a recurring answer that I just kept getting, even later on in life. But yeah, so I served my mission in Sweden, went through a lot, but I wanted to be faithful. The last part of my mission is where I met the mother to my children. And we didn't date on my mission, but we met on my mission. I served an honorable mission and ended up, going home, serving an honorable mission.
So you went back home to Arizona.
Yeah, I went back to Arizona and, went home to, a different life. My family had gone from being millionaires, living very comfortably, to being bankrupt, parents broken up, dad in a mental hospital, sister pregnant. But I was excited to get home. I was excited to see everyone. I was excited to finally be there. You know, I had to shut everything out and be a missionary. And finally I could be a member of the family. And it was awkward, but at the same time, it just felt great to finally be with the people I loved.
You talked about how you feel very protective about the people you love. Did you have the desire to come home and fix everything?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I did. I mean, you know, and I but at the same time, I just felt like, you know, God wanted me to be a missionary, and I kept hearing, like, you know, people, like leaders say, and even my mom said, you know, like, Heavenly Father wants you to be on a mission, and that's where you're supposed to be, and he's protecting you from all of this stuff. And at the time, I just bought it. I believed it and thought that's what I was supposed to be doing.
How did you run into your wife again now that you were in America and she was in Sweden?
Well, we stayed in touch. I mean, I knew that I was interested in her while I was a missionary. It just didn't let it go too far. And being home, I wanted to date, and I did that a little bit. I went to a singles ward. I didn't really quite feel comfortable there. You know, before I went on my mission, I wasn't really hanging out with the church crowd. I wasn't really hanging out with the good kids. And even though I served a mission and had dedicated, you know, changed my life and repented, and when I came home, I didn't really feel like I had that many friends in the church. I ended up making friends, actually, again, outside the church. and felt more comfortable with them. But I, you know, I still went to church. I even tried to convert some of my friends, but I stayed in touch with Linda, and she ended up coming over and visiting during spring break. And then we were able to like date and had a great time and decided that I would go to Sweden that summer and work and see what happened from there. But at the time I also was going to college and I studied photography. My teacher had told me to, I studied business, but I took a course in photography and I really enjoyed it. I was pretty good at it. And my teacher had told us to go home and hang up the pictures that we love on our wall. And I was living at home with my mom still. And I just hung up a lot of photos that I liked. And I remember her coming in and seeing a couple of them and saying, "Ryan, you need to take that down." And I was like, "Why?" And she said, "That's pornographic." And I was like, this isn't porn. This is art, Mom. I think it was photos I'd clipped out of a Vogue magazine. It was definitely not porn, but it was just like, I was like, "Wait, why do you think that? What really is it that?" And so I struggled with what I loved and what was acceptable to other members of the church even then. And that was also another conflict that I kept running into. But then after a semester in school, I went back to Sweden, dated my kid's mother, and very quickly got engaged and very quickly got married. I just felt like, you know, my mission president had told me that I needed to get married as quick as I could. My stake president had told me the same thing. I really dedicated myself to the church despite all of my questions. I was going out, spending my weekends instead of going to parties. I was going on splits with the missionaries and doing things like that, serving in various callings. And in Sweden, I worked, went to church, and went out with missionaries again here. And after getting married, we moved back to Arizona. There I was a scout leader. We got a job, or we both got jobs, and got involved in our new ward.
So you were leading the fairly typical early married Mormon life with your new bride.
Yeah. I mean, pretty typical for considering everything else. I mean, my family situation was still turbulent with my father. He wanted to move in, and I definitely did not feel like that was a good idea. And I would have to get really mad at me for not letting him live with me. And I just considering his situation, this was not a good idea. And my mom was. My mom was dating, and that was just kind of new, and I was happy that she was doing that. And my sister had her first child, and I was around for that, and her husband ended up getting baptized. I tried to get a couple of my friends to take the discussions, but it didn't end up working out. So, but I was trying to be a good Mormon. I really was. Even though a lot of things I still didn't feel good about, my wife had worked with the kids, and I did not like the primary situation. I didn't like what the kids were standing up and saying they know the church is true, and that they were singing that they wanted to go on missions. I really had a problem with that, even though I myself was wanting to be a believer. I didn't think it was right to, brainwash people into saying things that they really didn't mean.
And did you start to have children of your own?
Yeah, we, despite not being done with school and already being strapped for money, we decided to be good Mormons and have a baby. And then, of course, Linda had to quit working, and that put me in an awkward, hard situation with to be able to support for a family and go to school. And we quickly figured out that even living in we ended up moving to like the ghetto, just to the cheapest possible rent. But even doing that, I mean, it just after the bills were paid, we just didn't really have any money left. And we realized that, you know, if we stopped paying tithing, that we might have enough money to buy food. We had been buying food actually with credit cards for a couple months, diapers and things like that. We just did not have enough. Later on, some family members and friends said, well, why didn't you go to the bishop and tell him and get help from the church? There's those services. I honestly didn't even know about it. I always was taught to take care of myself, and I just wanted to take care of myself. But so we made the very tough decision of not paying tithing so that we could afford food. And we realized that we wouldn't be able to go to the temple, and I was fine with that. I was a little bored with the movie. I'd seen it several times and just didn't really feel like I was getting much out of wearing those fun clothes and watching a movie. It would have probably been better if there was popcorn, but it's not popcorn. That's a tip. Maybe have popcorn in the temple. It'd be more fun.
Yes, but it would have to be soda that wasn't caffeinated.
Yeah, some decaf Coca-Cola. Although, you know, a lot of Mormons, that's one thing. Mormons will drink energy drinks, but they won't drink coffee.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. But so we made that choice, and immediately we realized, okay, well, we can afford like food. It wasn't anything. We couldn't like exactly like afford to go out to nice dinners, but we could afford at least to eat. And a funny thing happened. It was like right after we had made that decision, and we went to Mill Avenue in Tempe just to have like a date. We just to get out. We didn't even have really money to. Maybe we had enough money to get an ice cream or something. But when we parked the car and I opened the door, I saw like a wad of cash. It looked like it was rolled up probably from some drug dealer or something. And then we had a little money to go out and get something to eat. And it was just a kind of reverse blessing for deciding not to pay tithing. So we were getting blessed by Satan, I guess, for making that decision. Yeah. So that was it. Funny.
And did you and your wife feel guilty about not paying tithing?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we felt really bad, and you know, like everything in church, when you're not doing what you're supposed to do, you feel bad about it. You feel ashamed. But you know, by then, I had got to the point where I wanted to be upfront. I wanted to be honest. You know, at the same time, I wasn't being upfront and honest about how I really felt about the church, but I was trying. I was really trying, but I felt really bad about the tithing thing. It was really tough. Our relationship was not good, and there was a lot of things involved that just weren't good. I mean, we were just not working out as a couple, but a big part of the problem was the finances. And coming from Sweden, my wife thought that it would be best that we went back to Sweden, because there they have assistance for, you know, when you have a baby. I think it's like a year and a half that you actually get like maternity leave from the government. You get like a paycheck for being home with your child. And I just figured, you know what? I've always worked. I worked since I was 10 years old. I could always get a job. So we packed up and we moved to Sweden, and I did. I got a job right away, and then she got some assistance, and immediately, you know, things were better. We didn't have to use a credit card for food, and we had money to go out to dinner sometimes, and that was felt like a really good choice, even though I had to leave a lot of family I really loved behind, and that was hard. You know, coming from such a big, close family, that wasn't easy, but I wanted to do what was best for my daughter and for my wife at the time.
Did you start to go to school in Sweden?
I actually wanted to go back to school. I had gone 2 years and studying international business, and I wanted to continue, but I wasn't able to because this education just didn't go together with their education here. So I had to go. I took Swedish courses, and I ended up just saying, you know what, I don't really like this. It's kind of another story. I had planned on being a photographer when I was younger. I just really liked it. But I ended up getting an eye disease while I was on my mission, or finding out that I had an eye disease. So that changed. And my doctor, when I got off my mission, had told me that I was going to become blind. So I decided I probably shouldn't focus on photography. I just do it as like kind of like a hobby. But then when I moved to Sweden, I got in touch with a lot better doctor who told me that I wasn't going to be blind. And so I kind of picked up photography again, not planning on like, or just more hoping that I would work with it again one day. But decided I'm just going to take another job and just whatever, because I did not want to go 2 years of Swedish school to be able to then pick up where I'd left off.
Oh my goodness. You left that out with your mission. So you have your father.
Say what?
You left that eye disease out.
Yeah.
So your dad became ill.
Yeah.
Your parents broke up. Your grandma and your uncle died. And then you had an eye disease you thought you were going to go blind from.
Yeah.
You had a rough 2 years.
It was interesting. I think everyone gets tried in different ways, but I definitely felt like I got my dose of it.
Yeah. That's hard. Well, I'm glad you didn't lose your sight.
No.
And I've been able to look at some of your work online, and you are an amazing photographer. You definitely have a talent.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I was able to make it into my profession and work with it full time. Today I do that alongside with running a magazine that I own together with another. So yeah, it ended up working out, even though I didn't pay my tithing. So anyways, but living in Sweden, when we first moved here, we wanted to give church like a really honest go. Even though I was having that whole tithing issue, we went back to church, or we kept going to church. I became the ward mission leader. I invited again coworkers and stuff to church, trying to get them involved. I was trying to be a good missionary, even though doing that in Sweden, there's not many people that do that in Sweden, because being Mormon in Sweden, being religious in general in Sweden, is kind of weird. Like, people literally look at it like, you still believe in Santa? Okay. And religion's just not looked at it the same way here as it is in the U.S. People don't really take it seriously. They look at it as like a Harry Potter story, at least most people.
Do you find that refreshing, or is it?
Now I find it very refreshing. I really like to just be able to talk about real things and real issues with people, and not have them tell me to go pray about it or read a book to get an answer. I mean, you can solve problems by discussing it or taking actual action to fix something. I'm not relying on something that I don't see. I can actually believe in myself. I mean, I still today believe in positive energy, and maybe there is something after this life, but I don't think it really matters. I'm jumping to the end, but yeah, I find it very refreshing to not have to be believing in something that I feel uncomfortable about. Definitely. But what led up to that would be me getting involved in church, but then again, being bored with church, being bored with the same lesson over and over and over again, and sitting in Sunday school and just being bored out of my mind. I mean, it's like, a good movie is a good movie, fine, but it's not good to watch every Sunday. I mean, it's not fun. And that's what church felt like. I was just getting it over and over again. At the same time, it was like watching a trailer. I felt like I was just watching a preview, that I wasn't really getting the whole story. There's got to be a lot more to this church. There's got to be a lot more to Joseph Smith. There's got to be a lot more to the history, to Brigham Young. And I liked history. That was one of the things I enjoyed going to school, was reading history. So I was like, I should really get into the Mormon history and check it out. Maybe that will be what I need to do. So I started to look up like a good book. I wanted a book that was going to give me, it was, you know, written by a Mormon, but also would give me more of a real history. And I did a little checking around and ended up ordering Rough Stone Rolling and just really looked forward to getting it. And then when I got it, I just started reading it. I was reading it, like, even in church. I was reading it all the time. I know a lot of people have had a hard time reading it, but for me, it was all new, and I just went through it. But I ended up getting shocked. I ended up feeling very strange about what I was reading. I ended up feeling deceived, like I had been lied to my entire life about what the church really was and how it really started and who Joseph Smith was as a person.
Did you try to work it through so you could stay in church and with that knowledge?
I tried. I asked, like, I know I called my mom and asked her about some things, and surprise, surprise, she hadn't heard about a lot of the stuff I was asking, and she's like, I don't know about that. I've never heard that, but I'll ask my bishop or I'll to it. Is in Sweden, not all the members are, you know, I asked members here, but they didn't know, but most of them are converts, and I really kind of knew they are not all going to really know what this is about, at least the ones around me. So she would get back to me and say, well, that actually did happen, but, you know, what's important is your testimony, and as long as you know that the Book of Mormon is true, you can just put that on a shelf. And I love my mom, but that's one thing she loves to say, is about all this stuff with Joseph Smith and him marrying teenagers and other men's wives while they're on missions and all of this other stuff that I just wasn't taking. And she just said, I'll just put it on a shelf. We'll find out later on. I just didn't feel good about that. I've never been someone that can just buy into stuff. I mean, had I known about this stuff before my mission, I guarantee you I would not have gone. I would not have stayed in the church. Some people are comfortable with this kind of stuff, or they're okay with it. I don't think really anyone is. I think that they make exceptions for other reasons, but I was definitely not okay with it. I felt horrible about it. I wanted an answer, but I wasn't getting one. I wanted to know why I had to live after such a high moral code if God's chosen prophet, who's supposed to be like the greatest prophet ever to be on the face of the earth besides Jesus, that if I was supposed to not masturbate, I wasn't supposed to be with women, other women besides my wife, or I wasn't supposed to sleep with girls outside of marriage. I mean, what was okay? Why was it okay for him to marry teenage girls? Why was it okay with him to, in secret? It was just so weird. Like he was doing it and telling them not to tell anyone, and telling women, marrying women while their husbands were on missions, and telling them to keep it a secret. And it just felt horrible. And of course, I heard people say, "Well, we don't know if they actually had sex." I'm like, "Yeah, right. Well, why else did he do it? I'm sorry. This is just a man as a man. You're not going to go through those hoops and not, you know, and not get the benefits. Come on. I'm sorry. I'm not buying this anymore." And it was just too much. Why do I have to be living after these standards? I was okay with the standards, but it was just like, he didn't live by them himself. Definitely not. Neither did hardly any of the early apostles or prophets. And then it was just more one thing after another. It was the blood atonement. It was the Book of Abraham. It was the racist comments made by Brigham Young, and that I was supposed to just accept that. It go back to this, accept that God liked me better than someone else. That I was a chosen son, and so he was letting me know the truth, but no one else. And I mean, well, not everyone else when you consider the percentage of how big this world is. It was just like, it just felt so unfair. It felt like God was an asshole. What kind of parent? I mean, that's horrible. If I knew a parent that was literally deceiving one of their kids and telling one the truth and another leading them on and like painting the other one black because they were bad. I mean, this is abuse. This is an abusive parent. And we're supposed to accept that
our Heavenly Father loves us and loves everyone? No, I don't. It was too much. It was too much.
Did you share your information with your wife?
Oh, yeah, I did. And I mean, she was a convert, and she definitely was not okay with any of this stuff. I mean, she couldn't believe it. I had told her that how Joseph Smith had translated the Book of Mormon, and then I had to tell her, no, well, actually, he used a magic rock and a hat. And it was like, okay, why didn't you tell me that before? Well, because I didn't know. And, you know, I had baptized her. And here I was having to tell her that most of everything I taught her was a lie.
Was she angry at you in any way?
No, no. I mean, of course she was angry at me for other reasons, but not for that. You know, we ended up getting a divorce later, but not for that. I think she understood that I was deceived as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But anyways, it just kept going back to some of these thoughts about that the church is creating people to just accept lies, and that, I mean, wondering how many of the people in the church don't know this and then just live with it. How many of my church leaders really are living up to this moral code? Joseph didn't. How many of them are living up to it? And then, but if I'm going to be honest and tell the truth about some of these things like I did in high school, then I'm just going to get disfellowshipped. But then you could just, how many members are just pretending to be worthy and looking down on other people? I mean, really, literally looking down on other people that aren't, or the people that are honest and disfellowshipped and that can't say prayers in church and or participate in priesthood blessings or things like that. But thankfully, I came to this understanding before my kids were to get baptized. And when I finally did, you know, I finally one day just came to the point where I had to say it out loud. I said it out loud to myself that I do not believe in the Mormon Church. I did not believe that Joseph Smith was a prophet of God. And when I said that, it was like, it was crazy because I felt free for the first time in a long time. I felt like I could finally be honest. I could finally tell the truth. It was a much better feeling than I had when I tried to pray about the church and thought that I had a warm, fuzzy feeling, which I did, but this was a much stronger feeling, that I could finally move on. And I didn't have to put things on a shelf. I didn't have to accept all of this crazy history. I didn't have to accept all of these things that I felt uncomfortable about. I didn't have to accept that I was chosen and that someone else wasn't. I didn't have to accept that black people were cursed and that Native Americans were cursed. And I didn't have to accept all of this crap that I didn't like.
So you found it to be very freeing.
It was amazing. You know, the hard part about it was that, you know, I felt great, but definitely my believing members of my family didn't find it to be great. And some took it a lot harder than others. And I've had some pretty big, I'm very honest about who I am. I don't try to hide it. When I go out back and visit, I am how I am. You know, if I'm out at a restaurant with my mom and I mean, I'm not going to order a beer just to order a beer to piss her off, but I'll order one because I want one. A side note on that is that I actually, after going to church, I probably didn't even drink alcohol for maybe 2 years. It was definitely not a reason why. I kept even after getting divorced, I, for quite a long time, I held the law of chastity because it was just kind of like part of who I was. It took time before I started feeling okay with some of these things that, hey, you know what, beer is okay as long as I don't drink too much, as long as I'm in control, as long as I can be a good dad. And there is ways to balance this stuff out, and I can do it myself. I don't need a church to resell my own like inner conscience to me to tell me what's right and wrong.
Well, and even if you weren't ordering a beer, I'm looking at your picture and you have a lot of tattoos. So You actually say it without even saying anything that you live a different life now.
Yeah, I've always been fascinated with tattoos and always loved them. I actually started getting tattooed even as an active member, even knowing that was one of my sins that I felt okay with, just because I loved tattoos so much. And today, yes, I'm pretty much covered from neck.
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't hide it anymore. Your family knows how your position.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about? Well, you haven't mentioned another child yet. You had another baby.
Yeah, I had another baby in there, and beautiful son. I mean, I my kids are just amazing. I'm waiting for them to like just get to that point where they're. Don't like their dad, or they don't think that I'm cool anymore. But I mean, they're just amazing. We have so much fun together. But yeah, I was able to. We walked away when Aiden was really young, and it was it wasn't long after that that we decided that we needed to actually move on from each other. And you know, we live in the same town, and I live here for my kids. And I have them every other week, and it's great. I can be myself with my kids, and my kids can be themselves to me, and we can talk about whatever. And they're good. They're really good. I mean, my daughter she's 12 years old, and she is just a good kid. And if anyone asked her if she believes in God, and I tell her, you know, you can believe whatever you want. And I'm okay with that. But she's like, no, I don't. She kind of believes in like spiritualism stuff. She's into ghosts right now, but she definitely does not believe in Jesus. And she thinks that these kind of things are a little weird. And I'm like, she has relatives here in Sweden actually that are members, and they've talked to her and try and tell her about stuff, but she thinks for herself. And I'm just so proud of her that she uses her head. And I'm glad to be able to give that to my kids, that I'm not forcing them to sing a song with words that they don't even believe. I'm not pressuring them to stand up in front of people and say they know something's true and they don't. It's amazing. So we've moved on. When I left the church, though, or when I left, I actually didn't resign and send in the paperwork till quite recently. It's kind of like faded away. A lot easier to do in Sweden because there's not very members. So when I stopped going to church, it was just, I already had built up a network of friends that were outside of the church. I really didn't hang out so much with people in the church in my free time. So it was kind of just like on my own, which was good in some ways, bad in others, because I had a lot of this baggage and emotional things to go through that I didn't really feel like I could talk with to anyone. Because if I talked to one of my family members back home, they just didn't really quite get it. I'll add two of my brothers. They are definitely not active at all in the church, but they never really have. They've never really bought into it. They just haven't liked it. So they really don't know much about it. It wasn't like I could really talk to them 100% about it, though I do, and they're really cool. But eventually I ran into an old friend, childhood friend that I met in the church coming, you know, when I was here in Sweden during the summer. And his name's Adam. Shout out to Adam. He came and visited me here in Falun, where I live. And he's like, hey, you know, there's some communities out there online where people get together and talk about this stuff. And I was like, really? I don't know. I'm good. And then it just set. I'm like, really? It would be kind of cool to like just hear. And he told me about these podcasts. I started listening to all the different podcasts, and I just got hooked. I just loved. And what I loved hearing the most was other people's stories. People's stories that were, you know, like strong members of the church and left. And these were intelligent people. People that, you know, weren't just Jack Mormons to start off. They were actually really into the church, and they left because they weren't okay with the history like me. They weren't okay with some of these issues. And it was like, it was just so refreshing to feel that I wasn't alone. You know, I really didn't. And, you know, meeting Adam, and then I ended up jumping online and finding out that some really good childhood friends also had left the church and jumped away and reconnected with a couple of them, just either talking online, a mission leader from a ward that I served on my mission. Him and his family had left, and they're just awesome. I've visited them a couple of times. And but besides that, I really haven't connected. One day I've really got to come out to Utah and visit my family, and I would really love to just kind of like connect with some other people that have left the church. I mean, it is kind of the same story, but it's nice to just feel that you're not alone.
Oh, definitely. It makes you feel like you're not crazy.
Exactly. I mean, it's really easy to feel like you're just bad because you don't believe. Why does everyone else believe? Why can't I just be okay with it? You know, why can't I be fine? But I just couldn't handle it anymore. It felt like I was going to literally go crazy if I had stayed in the church. I would not be okay. And I wish that, you know, some of my family members understand that, some don't. And I just wish that more people could understand, you know what, you might actually be happier outside of the church. In most cases, I think you will if you're honest to yourself.
Right. So now your children have the free agency to choose. You got out before they were baptized. They've never known a life in church.
Not really. I think they can kind of remember it, but it's not. They've mainly been raised outside of the church, and that feels good. I think they were too young to really remember too much. They never talk about it.
Okay. And now I don't know, where do you want to take it now?
I just want to continue my life. I've been in another relationship 3 years, not married, live together and enjoying, you know, every day, taking it as it goes. And I want to just be okay with changing my mind. I want to be okay with not knowing what's out there. I like that. I like to just feel like I can be a good person no matter what I believe or what I don't believe. And I can make those decisions. I don't need someone else to tell me what's right and wrong.
Nice. How's your father now?
He's worse. He ended up taking it, he ended up taking it from believing that he was in the CIA to that he was a day knight and that he was working for the church in secret and involved in all these different conspiracy things. And it's just not good. And it's really sad to see. And I can't help to think, I mean, he was going to be where he is no matter what, but I can't help to think that the church has definitely fueled the flame and that it's not healthy to have these pressures of belief put onto him, entangled in all the rest of the problems that he's dealing with. And, you know, I mean, I talk to him when I can handle it. It can be pretty hard to talk to him sometimes. You know, I say, he's my dad. I love him. But, and he'll probably never be the dad I grew up with, the dad I knew when I was little, but I gotta be happy for the good times.
And I've shared with you that my own father has mental illness, and one thing I've been very frustrated with in the church is that they are really irresponsible with mental illness. From my experience, they treat it as that it's Satan's influence on these people and not mental illness. Have you had any experience with that?
No. I mean, well, I haven't. Fortunately, I've understood actually that in the beginning, I didn't really know what to think. I wanted to believe my dad. And that was probably what was really hard, especially on my mission. At the beginning, I didn't know what to believe. But luckily, by the time I got home, I mean, they just understood that it was an illness. And he took way too many prescription drugs. And I
think that's probably triggered off a lot of it. He was definitely, when he was a workaholic. He was working so much with so many different things, and he was taking things to stay awake, and he was taking things to fall asleep, and then he had some injuries that caused him pain, and he got hooked on morphine, and it was just like, I think that was more what really set things off. But mixing in all of, you know, he started looking, getting confused about different things that happened in his life, and changing the reality. And when you start throwing in religious beliefs into that, it just gets really weird.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry to hear he's not doing very well still.
No. I don't know really what to say more about that than it just is. I wish that he would, I wish he would be better. And, you know, in that sense, I hope, you know, I can hope that there's something better for him later. I don't know what it is. I can just hope that something, I don't know. But then again, I have to just, if there's not, then I've got to be happy for the time that we had together.
And did your mom remarry?
She did. She remarried shortly after my first, well, after I first got married, my first wife, and, they're still together, and they're very, very, very active in California. Even they were involved in that whole, what was that, Prop?
Prop 8.
Yeah, they were involved in that. I was not so happy about that. But, yeah, they do what they're told. And she seemed, you know, she says it's she's happy and that it makes her happy. And, you know, I know she really truly does believe in it. And that's fine, you know. If it makes you happy, fine.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't, then get out, because it's not worth dealing with.
Well, good. It sounds like you've come to a good place in your life, and you have beautiful children and a successful career in Sweden. And as common in all these interviews, I'm just amazed at the sense of freedom that everybody has now that they found something else.
Oh, that's definitely the best part. It's definitely the best part.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Ryan, for taking time out of your day and talking with us. And I know that a lot of people will benefit from your interview.
All right. Thank you. I know I benefited a lot from previous interviews, so I hope to do the same.
Great. And thanks. And if you would like to be on Mormon Expression Voices, please email me at voices@mormonexpression.com. And I'm also have a man who's going to help me with interviews. So if you are more comfortable with the male perspective and would like to be interviewed by him, just let me know and we can set that up for you too. So thank you very much, Ryan.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Heartbreaking by my that's how